We snuck in another tune from the Greengrass Bluegrass album while I was redialing Paul Brock of the wonderful Brock McGuire Band from Ireland, who are now touring America. Paul, how are you?
Very good, Steve. Delighted to have the opportunity of talking to you.
We talked a little bit earlier off the air, and Paul, you know, being a traveling musician on the road, he's got those issues, and then he's checking into the hotel, and we're fine now. We're ready to chat a little bit. Tim O'Brien's going to pop in around 4 or so, but we have plenty of time to talk about the Brock McGuire Band. Explain to the people, Paul, if you wouldn't mind, as I do research on the band and as I play, get more and more familiar with your music, and then I guess more related to this show, this particular program, the Greengrass Bluegrass, it notes in there that the Brock McGuire Band was voted the best instrumental band in the last decade in Ireland.
Yes, here in the States, actually.
Was it in the States? Okay, well, all right, bigger market, yeah, then, bigger market.
Yeah, we got the award from the Irish American News last year here in America as best Irish instrumental band of the decade. But Steve, just maybe to quickly tell you the background on the band.
Sure.
First of all, we're Irish based, and we were formed in the year 2000. Prior to that, Manus McGuire and myself, Manus McGuire is the half of the band, Brock McGuire, and he's our fiddle player. And Manus and myself, prior to the formation of this band, were with a band called Moving Cloud. And continued up to the year for about 10 years up to the year 2000 and then disbanded, and then Manus and myself put the current grouping together. We're 4-piece. We were up to about 18 months 2 years ago, we were all instrumental, but we now have a vocalist as part of the band, and I'll tell you about that in a moment.
Sure.
When we were formed, the grouping was myself on Irish button key accordion and melodeon, that's a single row Irish style accordion, Manus McGuire on fiddle and on piano accompaniment, Dennis Carey, and we had a banjo player with us, banjo mandolin player with us up to about 2 years ago, a guy called Ed Scal, and he was replaced almost 2 years ago by the man who is now with us full time, and that's his name is Gary O'Mara. He comes from Dublin and he plays Irish tenor banjo and mandolin, and he's also a vocalist. And I should have mentioned, by the way, for anybody interested, I'm originally from the Irish Midlands. I was born in Athlone, but I've lived in County Clare for many, many years, and Clare, for many people, is sort of regarded, I suppose, as the home of Irish music, in the sense that there are probably more traditional musicians living in County Clare, I think, than any other county in Ireland. I mentioned Manus McGuire, our fiddle player. Manus comes from Sligo, so he's part and parcel of that great Sligo fiddle tradition. Down through the years, Sligo has developed an incredible tradition of having produced some of the great fiddle players in the Irish tradition, people like Michael Coleman and James Morrison and Paddy Killorn and many others. So Manus follows in that Sligo fiddle tradition. And Dennis Carey comes from a place called Newport. Dennis is our piano player, and he comes from a place called Newport in Tipperary, County Tipperary. It's near Limerick City, and Dennis is very well known back home as, apart from being a musician, he's also very well known as a composer, as an arranger. His compositions have been performed by all sorts of people at home and abroad, including, for example, Scottish National Orchestra, Symphony Nova Scotia, many, many others. So he's a well-known composer, and he writes some Really, really nice music. And so that's the makeup of the band. We're based in Ireland. Insofar as our repertoire, you're with me, Steve, all the time?
Yes, sir.
Good. So apart from, yes, our repertoire, just to talk a bit about that.
Yeah, sure,
what
please.
We play. We're at the core of what we do is obviously Irish traditional music, and we play the music that's been handed down from generation to generation for many hundreds of years. And so all of us grew up in that tradition, and all of us have been playing that music since we were very young, and all of us have, I suppose, absorbed all of the influences that have been around us growing up. I have a keen interest in the whole sort of history of the music, and particularly the music as it developed here in North America, because there were lots of important developments that happened out here that had a big impact on the development of traditional music. So, for example, the emigrant musicians who came out here, and that goes way back, 1600s, 1700s, you had the Scots-Irish movement into the southern Appalachians. And so Ireland has been exporting people, as you probably know, for many, many, many years. And Irish people have gone around the world, especially to the English-speaking countries. And So you find in your travels, you find Irish people in all of the English-speaking countries and in lots of other countries as well. But one of the main ports of call was North America, and so many immigrants came out here. And, of course, they brought the music with them. And the music that they brought with them continues to influence the music of America right to this day. So as we travel around as a band, and have been doing so for many, many years, we're always listening for the influence of our music. So when we go into Canada, for example, you hear that influence in the music of Quebec, in the French Canadian music. And when you come into Eastern Canada, for example, in Newfoundland and Cape Breton, you hear a very strong influence of our music there. And as I mentioned, you hear it in the Appalachians, the Southern Appalachians, in the old-timey music, the country music, the bluegrass music. And we're always listening for the connections between our own music and what we hear out here. And I suppose that gave rise to the record that you mentioned, the CD Greengrass Bluegrass, because we were thrilled some years back to come in contact with Ricky Skaggs, and we've been long admirers of Ricky's music and song, and we got to a state where if we were touring in Tennessee and found ourselves in Nashville, we usually visited Ricky if he was in town, and we wound up jamming with him on various occasions, and it was out of that grew the Greengrass Bluegrass project. We looked at Ricky one day and we said, let's do an album, and he was in total agreement. So we sourced the material then over a period of time that we thought would suit the instrumentation of our own band and the instrumentation of the guest musicians on the album. And apart from Ricky, we had a couple of amazing players, Aubrey Haney, mm-hmm. and a wonderful fiddle player, yes. Brian Sutton, equally wonderful on guitar and clawhammer banjo. Jeff Taylor, a great friend of ours from Nashville, who is a multi-instrumentalist and plays all kinds of different kinds of music, including Celtic music, and Mark Fain on bass. So we picked material that we thought would suit our own band and the crossover with the American musicians. And we came out roughly 2 years ago to Nashville to record most of the album. Some of the tracks that just involve our own band, the Four Piece, had already been done in Ireland. We just came out on a Sunday, and we went in to Ricky's studio on a Monday morning and sat around in a circle and spent a few days just playing the music, and that's how the album came about. So people seem to think that it's a very interesting marriage of the two traditions, and so that's how the Greengrass Bluegrass album came about.
Well, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we talk about, and have been talking about in the last, not new ground at all, but for this program, we've been mentioning the impact of Irish music, and everybody knows that, but we've been doing it with Trida. You know, we've had Irish bands participate in the show, and We Banjo 3, which I believe is where your former banjo player is playing with now.
And so
I try to make these comments. And we even had an Australian band on from Melbourne, and of course they're playing bluegrass music, also inspired by immigrants from Ireland to the Melbourne area. So as you travel around the world with this wonderful Brock McGuire band, it's almost like you're traveling around and you're hearing echoes back of the Irish music that you grew up and played, as it's been sort of translated back through other cultures.
Absolutely, it's a great way of putting it, and it makes us immensely proud that a small country like Ireland, which has a population of 4.5 million, and it is a small country, like it's 350 miles from top to bottom and 200 miles from east to west. So it boxes way above its weight in terms of its impact and its influence, and that makes us immensely proud as musicians to kind of see how strong the music is and how influential it is. And of course, we're part of a wider European, Western European folk tradition, but Our music has stood the test of time and has been handed down orally from generation to generation, and I have never seen it in as strong a state as it's in right now, and it's immensely satisfying to see the numbers of young people who are attracted to the music in Ireland. And, you would be astonished. I don't know, Steve, if you've been to Ireland, but you would be astonished at the numbers of players who are attracted to the tradition, and the numbers of groups and the different approaches being taken, and the crossover stuff that's going on. It goes on and on.
And Paul, I haven't been. I would dearly love to go. I've always been afraid that I wouldn't come back. but you're right. There are bands, like, for example, and I mentioned We Banjo 3 because this audience is familiar with them. Now, they're doing a more modern interpretation of the same kind of sounds that you carry with you. We'll have as a guest shortly, and I play a lot of music from an Irish band that I met at a Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, I Draw Slow.
Yes, I know I Draw Slow. Yes.
Yeah, and they have a nice, it's Irish, but it's like an updated version. But all those same feelings from what you are still traveling around playing, they're all still there. They still have homage to that sound and that texture, and maybe some of the tunes are updated, but it must be just beyond imagination what's actually there that I don't know about.
Yeah, and the other feature of the scene too at home is that the Irish music has now gone global. It's been played all over the world. It's been played in China, Japan, Russia, the Middle East, the Far East. And I suppose a lot of that has come in the wake of the success of some of the big bands, you know, like the Chieftains, who have over a period of 50 years, well over 50 years at this stage, have been taking Irish music right around the world and are incredibly popular. And then, of course, for the past 20 years almost, you've had the phenomenon of Riverdance,
Yes.
Which I think is one of the most successful shows in the history of show business and has been seen by, I don't know how many million people, but I think next year is 20 years on the road. And, of course, that's brought Irish music and Irish dance to new audiences all over the place in the most unlike of places, you know. So yeah. our music is heard in African countries, it's heard in South American countries, and it, all the places I mentioned, you know. So
it's not dying down at all, Paul. I think you're making the point clear that it's very strong in different forms in different countries, and it just seems to keep rolling out there with the tide.
Yeah, and then of course, you know, I think another feature, you know, that I see is younger bands who are pushing out the boundaries and are trying different things, different fusion approaches, and that's fine because I think the bedrock of the tradition is so strong that it's always going to be there. I mean, it's extraordinary. I saw not too long ago, I saw a reference to the fact that there are 16,000 tunes that have been documented in the Irish tradition. Actually, wow. Documented 16,000. That's reels, jigs, hornpipes, slides, polkas, mazurkas, instrumental music, plus airs that are played instrumentally, but that have come out of the song tradition. But it's an extraordinary bank of material that people draw from. And of course, we had some amazing collectors over the years. One of the most famous was Captain Francis O'Neill, who came from Bantry in County Cork and travelled the world in the 1800s and eventually came to Missouri and worked as a teacher for a time before he went to Chicago in the late 1800s and joined the police force there and eventually became the chief of police in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, one of his passions was to collect the music from the emigrant musicians who lived in America at the time in the early 1900s. And having collected the material, he then, through a company, a famous company in Chicago called Lyne & Healy, he published a number of collections of our music. And those collections, the O'Neill collections, remain with Irish musicians to this day and are kind of they're the stock and trade, they're the Bible for musicians. And fortunately, you know, they're accessible, they've been reprinted many times, and musicians who are interested in Irish tunes, in Irish music, can very easily acquire the O'Neill collections. And of course, the other thing too is that with technological advances, the numbers of recordings of Irish music, is phenomenal. I can't give you a figure, but certainly, like in the last couple of years, there would be, I don't know, 300 brand new discs of Irish music. So that's gone from a scene where in the 1980s you might have had, in Ireland, you might have had maybe 10 or 15 CDs being produced annually, or vinyls at the time being produced annually of Irish music. And now I think we've almost lost count. There's so much stuff coming out because technology facilitates that. And young bands are very easily able to get their material out there in CD form.
Paul, let me ask you this. What do you think? We have this tiny little country of Ireland and these little counties where this music is seated in well, and things that you've learned. Why is it that when Irish music travels the world, it finds a home in all these different cultures that you've described, and it fits as almost it was always a part of that culture? Why does that happen? Do you have any idea?
Well, I suppose whatever it is about the characteristics of the music, there's a kind of an instantaneous connection for people who have never experienced it before. So it tends, people who have never been exposed to Irish music, when they hear it for the first time, they feel an instant connection. And there's, I suppose there's a drive and a rhythm to the music that is undoubtedly very exciting, and that even switches on the uninitiated very, very easily, you know. So it's music that seems to make people happy. It's music that makes people want to dance. It's music that stirs the spirit, so to speak.
It does that, and it's not all. And you're talking about the more up tempo, but even the ballady and the slower things, it seems to touch a place in the hearts of people that aren't Irish by a nationality. But that same thing seems to speak in the slower tunes. There's something that draw. I mean, you know, understand what I'm saying? I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah. Well, of course, the song tradition is extraordinarily powerful. And if you look at the airs that have come out of the Irish tradition, I mean, the air Danny Boy, even though it wouldn't be regarded as traditional, the air itself, the words wouldn't be regarded as traditional, but the air itself is a beautiful air, and it's a very old air, and it was collected in the north of Ireland in County Derry. And the air itself of Danny Boy dates way back. But yeah, there's something about, and of course, I always thought, Steve, that the music, when it came out here to America and was played in that, what we call the golden era of Irish music, that's roughly the first half of the 20th century, when there were a whole lot of things happening. You know, you had the beginnings of the recording industry, so music was being recorded for the first time. Job opportunities in the music industry were happening for the first time. Radio broadcasting started here in the 1920s, I think, mid-1920s. You had, of course, the whole arrival of the different ethnic groupings from different parts of the world coming into America and this amazing melting pot. And you had the development of other music genres. And I often thought that the Irish musicians out here were making a point with their music when they played it. And there's certainly, when you listen to those historic recordings, you hear a lonesomeness in the music.
Yeah.
I do. And there's something about that music that sets it apart. And I always think that the musicians who were playing it at the time were making a point, that they weren't here by choice. They were here because of economic circumstances, right, in Ireland that caused them to have to leave. So when they came here, they were making a point, and that lonesomeness comes across.
The longing to go back home and to be home, and the music put them back there for the time that they were playing and singing it, I think is what the passion comes through.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
So our band has been traveling in America for many, many years, and it's a favorite place of ours to come to because there's a very high level of appreciation of our music. And people, when they come out to a concert, they come out to soak up the music, to soak up the context around the music, to meet us. But there's a high level of appreciation. I mean, we were in Berea last night in Kentucky. We played a concert at the university there, and it was just immensely satisfying to have an audience there that were so attentive, so enthusiastic, so appreciative of what we were doing. So we got sustained applause right through the program. So it was a wonderful experience.
That's great. Listen, I know that you just got into town. You're playing tonight at the Irish Heritage Center, which is on Eastern in Cincinnati, Ohio. And Paul, I've loved this. I've just been sitting here absorbing I want you to come back, maybe before you head back to Ireland, if you could come back and we could kind of sum up the trip through America, if you want. I mean, I'm open to it. Yes, I love this. The story that you're telling is helping me fill in blanks at a level that I could never do through books and through just listening to music and reading liner notes. I'm going to let you get back to rest up for tonight. I'm going to play, if you don't mind, from the Green Grass Bluegrass, because this tune will be eminently recognizable to all the listeners. You have on the Green Grass Bluegrass album, which is on Compass, a tune which is Darling Girl from Clarence, also combined with Turkey in the Straw. And that ought to be recognizable to everybody on the other side of the microphone, don't you think?
Yeah, well, the Darling Girl from Clare is a composition of the great Percy French. He came from the Irish Midlands, and he was born near Roscommon Town in the mid-1800s. And he went to Trinity College in Dublin. He qualified as an engineer, and he got his first job as inspector of drains for the county of Cavan. He was posted to County Cavan, and he quit the job after a short time and developed a one-man show. He played the banjo and he sang, and he took his one-man show around Ireland, cycled around Ireland, and apart from carrying his banjo, he also carried his artist's materials, because he was a wonderful painter, watercolorist, and he painted many, many landscapes, especially in the west of Ireland, which today, if you happen to be fortunate enough to own one, they're very valuable. But of course, he's, as a songwriter, that's how you remember Percy French, for the songs he wrote, like The Mountains of Mourne, Come Back Paddy Riley, and many, many others, including the one you're going to play now, The Darling Girl from Clare. And Clare, of course, is where I live now, and so it has a kind of a special connection. Yeah. And for anybody who might have an interest or in this, Clare played today in a replay of the All-Ireland Hurling Final. They played Cork, and Clare actually won. And so it's a huge, huge day today for Clare, because they're the All-Ireland Hurling champions.
I think that I saw Mara O'Connell squealing on Facebook about that very event that you're talking about. Did that just happen?
Just today?
Yes, that's it. Mara, I saw these posts from Mara, of course, a wonderful Irish singer, and that must have been because, yes, she was. Now I get it. Now it makes sense to me. Okay.
Yeah, all right. And it was played. It's our national game, hurling. It's like field hockey. It's a very exciting game. Played at great speed and with great skill. And it was played in front of a crowd of over 80,000 in our national stadium in Dublin earlier today. And Clare won. So there's another connection with the Darling.
There you go. That's the Darling Hurling team from Clare. Paul Brock of the Brock McGuire Band, thanks for stopping by to this program, Steve Martin's Unreal Bluegrass on Worldwide Bluegrass. And really, think about it. Before you head back, give me a call if you have a minute, and we'll just talk about the end of the trip and whatever else you got coming up. Does that sound like that's certainly an open invitation. You can pick up whenever you want and give me a holler.
Thanks so much, Steve. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh,
thank you so much.
This has been a blast. Thank you, Paul. I'll talk to you later then.
Thank you.
All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Bye.
That was a blast. This is enjoyable to me, but that was a wonderful history lesson from the heart of a man who lives this music and has and can connect it back to Ireland in a way that it's like you're there. Thanks so much to Paul Brock of the Brock McGuire Band.